Hey there. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross. It's 5:06. In the background, music of Yatta and Friends. A couple of new CDs out from that gentleman, a friend of Spectrum West, of course. This is from the Imagination Nation Instrumentals version. There's also one called Nature Girl. We'll be talking about those in a future show, I'm sure. Today, another packed show. Another example of trying to fit a size 10 foot into a size 9 shoe. But we're going to do it. We're going to enjoy it. We're even going to dance to show you how it doesn't bother us in the least. Here we go. Today we'll get a preview of Sunday's first Master Singers concert of the season, America My Home, The Road Home. Music director Gary Schwartzoff will tell us about it. He has a busy weekend, including, wow, the 21st Annual Clearwater Choral Festival. We'll tell you about that a little more. We'll have the principals of the 4th Annual Schneider Disability Issues Forum coming next week, a confluence of speaking and writing, as we talk with Catherine Schneider about the strength of meeting to talk about things. We'll also welcome Kathy Nimmer, a teacher and author making a presentation about and including a book she wrote. That's about guide dogs and the special relationships that exist between animal and physically challenged humans. We're excited to have both women with us. Also tell you about the Indian Head Barbershop Chorus and their impressive 54th fall concert coming up tomorrow in Amory. What do you say we initiate this version of Spectrum West with some news that needs distribution because there's a deadline attached to it? The musical director of the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony, Aurelien Petiot, stopped by to chat all about it. Well, a week from Sunday, I see you're planning quite an event, and I believe if I simply utter the name, it'll ignite some sparks. Where is it? Where are my notes here?
Dances and Disguises.
Yes, Dances and Disguises Masquerade Dinner.
And Benefit Concert.
Yeah,
our largest fundraising event of the year.
So I'm going to let you expound even more than that.
First of all, this is my first time conducting the Youth Symphony Orchestra, which I'm really excited about, and the kids have been working really, really hard. It's our Dances and Disguises concert, which is a masquerade dinner and a benefit concert, and it's the largest fundraiser we have throughout the year. We hope to raise $2,500 to go towards scholarships for our musicians and also to finance our outreach concert and our bus tour to different schools in the area.
And, you know, this is kind of a triple whammy for me because not only do I get to say Aurelien Petiot, I also get to say Tulio Rondon.
Rondon.
And I get to say Nobuyoshi Yoshida.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very international affair. You know, it's a real privilege I have to be collaborating with Tulio and Nobu. They've always been very, very kind to me since I moved to Eau Claire last year. And we're enjoying a very strong collaboration with the Department of Music at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. So when I thought about this program, about disguises and carnivals and masquerades, which is basically everything the music is going to be doing, I wanted to have them be part of that. So Tulio will be performing a piece that, as far as I know, has never been performed in the United States. It's a piece by David Popper, who's a very important cellist composer. And he wrote this little piece called Arlequin from a suite called Masked Ball. And then we're doing a piece by Aram Khachaturian. And the second movement is for solo violin and orchestra. It's a beautiful nocturne. And Nobuyoshi will be doing the honors and having a nice little cameo.
Well, our lives are more enriched and fulfilled because you guys are here. So now we have a dinner at 5:30. The concert's at 7. I would be remiss if we didn't delve into the masquerade part of this whole thing.
Okay. Well, it's very simple. People can show up wearing masks, wearing costumes, or just being themselves, and we'll do that on stage. We'll have masks, just a little masquerade and trying to figure out who's hiding behind the mask. And the music itself is wearing many masks. We're going to have themes that come back in different arrangements, different orchestrations, different instrumentations, and the idea is to kind of figure out, hey, that looks familiar. That, you know, I think I've heard that before, but it will be somehow disguised, and it's really fun.
That's the disguise part.
Yeah, it's part of the music.
And our time's up. Give us the website so that people can get as much information between now and then as they can.
Well, it's very easy. You go to cvyouthsymphony.org, and you can register there for the dinner. And if you just want to go to the concert and you don't want to go to the dinner, which would be a shame because the food is really excellent, the concert admission is $9. And it's, I think, $5 for students with ID. So it's a very good deal to get to listen to the youth of our community and support them and support this great organization.
Yeah, you bet. Remember, it's coming up the 21st, Sunday. The deadline, though, for reserving your dinner spot is Monday, this coming Monday, the 15th. So if you've been convinced, like I have, that this is a must-do event for a very worthy cause, go to the Youth Symphony website. Over the weekend, secure your spot as a concert goer and a supporter. And by the way, thank you. Spectrum West at 512. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us. Let's keep the old Spectrum train rolling with a sound of a familiar voice, our good friend Jim Oliver, and a conversation about something he likes to do, read, with a gentleman who likes to write. And so it goes.
The 13th Annual Chippewa Valley Book Festival will celebrate the theme, How Authors Enrich Our Lives, from October 15th to the 21st at various locations around the region. One of the authors presenting during the festival is Peter Guy of Minneapolis. He will give his presentation, The North Shore is My Fiction and My Life, at 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 17th at the Menominee Public Library. Peter Guy joins us by telephone to talk about his books and his presentation. I seem to have done things backwards here. I read your most recent book, The Lighthouse Road, first, and now I'm in the process of reading Safe from the Sea, which was published a couple of years ago. Give us a little bit of a preview of what you'll be telling the folks during your presentation in Menominee.
Well, one of the main characteristics of both books is the presence of the North Shore, is not only the location and setting of the books, but also the sort of character itself. I won't say it happened accidentally, but sort of the prominence, the role it plays in both books. I mean, it became a topic unto itself, I guess. And the reasons for that are pretty simple. It's just a place that I love and a place that I've been going to my whole life, go to as often as I can. So I'll be talking about why that is and some of the qualities about the North Shore that make it both a great place to spend time and to write about.
According to your biography, you were born in Minneapolis and now live there. You've developed a love or interest in the North Shore of Lake Superior throughout your whole life. What would you say, particularly the characters that you developed, where did they come from?
My characters, first of all, they're all just strictly products of my imagination, you know, with a few small exceptions, resemble people in my own life or people that I've known. And I guess they're composite of people that I've known, people that I wish I knew, people that I've met up along the North Shore or in other parts of the country as well. But they all have this quality that most Minnesotans and Midwesterners recognize, you know, the sort of stoic, quiet, Scandinavian, German, Northern European stock that so many of us are.
Well, let's tell us a little bit about Safe from the Sea to start with.
Safe from the Sea is my debut novel. It came out a couple of years ago, and it's a story of an estranged father and son. The father is a retired ore boat captain who happens to have been the survivor of a fictional Great Lakes shipwreck, a rather infamous one. It was sort of the dividing point in his life. He turned in the course of the tragedy from a loving and doted father into a troubled man. And over the course of the years, he and his son drifted apart, and now the old man is at the end of his life and attempting to make amends for the lifetime that he and his son have spent apart. It's a good old-fashioned family drama, but it's also sort of built around this fictional shipwreck. So all the action of the shipwreck is retold from the father's point of view, and it becomes the central story of the novel.
I've actually read the whole Lighthouse Road book. I can talk a little bit more intelligently about it. I am, with Safe from the Sea, I'm just at the point where the old man is starting to tell about the shipwreck.
Ah, yes.
The Lighthouse Road looks at the life along the North Shore from the late 19th century until the early to mid-20th century. So what I'm interested in is how you research the material to capture what life was like in those early years.
Actually, the sort of initial idea for the book came to me while I was researching the first book many years ago. I have a book of old photographs of sort of a pictorial history of the Great Lakes, not just the North Shore, but there's a photograph of a woman in a lumber camp circa the late 1800s, and for a long time I would just look at her picture and be fascinated imagining what her life might be like, and I spent a lot of time doing that, and I didn't exactly know that I was conjuring up ideas for a book. I suppose in hindsight I must have known it, or I wouldn't have spent so much time looking at her, but I just was fascinated with this idea. So she became the main character in The Lighthouse Road, a woman named Thea Ide. She's one of two main characters. And you would expect that, you know, writing with so many years between your own experience and the experience of your characters would be difficult. But on the contrary, I found it to be, in a lot of ways, sort of liberating, largely because though there were sort of technical and historical details to work out, imagining their lives, the way they felt, and the things that they did, I was free of all the limitations of my own experience and the experience of people that I know and people that I've grown up with and so forth. So, you know, I of course had to dig into how the lumber camps worked up on the North Shore and in northern Minnesota and how the commercial fishery worked and other period details. But that's fun. That's fun stuff. That's just learning history and then incorporating those details into my characters' lives. That's the other fun part. That's making the fiction out of the historical.
He is Peter Guy, who is author of Safe from the Sea and The Lighthouse Road. He will be talking about his books and their setting along the north shore of Lake Superior at the Menominee Public Library on October 17th. Well, I'm just curious, did you ever take a boat trip down the north shore of Lake Superior in the wintertime, as you describe in the book?
I have not. I've been on the tour boats up in Duluth Harbor and so forth, but I've never been out on a boat in Lake Superior in the way that the characters in my books are. I guess for me, going back to Safe from the Sea, people often ask why write about the ore boats and a shipwreck and the things that you wrote about. And for me, it goes back to the sense of awe that I had as a kid, seeing, you know, a boat come in or out of Duluth Harbor for the first or second time. And, I mean, I was just a tyke at the time, but I remember thinking how fascinating it was that something so huge could float. And that sense of awe stays with me. And still, when I see a boat coming in and out of Duluth Harbor, it stirs something up in me. And having that to draw on, that curiosity, that fascination, that sense of awe, those are good ingredients for a writer. At least in my experience, they are. They get at the mystery of the world, which is in a lot of ways what I'm trying to write about. So even though I haven't been on a boat heading out into a stormy night on Lake Superior, with the right amount of research and imagination, I feel like you can write about those things. And the response that I've had from folks with Safe from the Sea was that people who had lived lives like the characters in my books and who had worked on the boats or worked on the docks or been married to people who worked on the boats or worked on the docks, they saw the truth in it, and that was meaningful and special for me to hear.
Main character, The Lighthouse Road, is a fellow named Ode Einar Eide. Where did you come up with a name like that?
I was accused many times when my wife and I were naming our own kids of having cockamamie ideas about what we should call them. I wanted to name them all Olaf and Gustav and things like that. She wouldn't have it. She's a good Irish-German girl from Wisconsin. So I think that because I lost those battles, I decided that I'd name every one of my characters after some strange Nordic name. That's where they came from. I've literally got a name dictionary from Norway up on my desk, and we'll go to it often when it's time to name a character. In the case of Ode, though, my wife's family has family friends from Norway, and they have a son named Ode.
Where would we find the books if we wanted to buy them?
Well, at your local independent bookseller, first and foremost, but failing that, it's available to buy anywhere, any of the outlets around.
You know, you have a website. Do you sell books through your website, or do you?
I know you can link to my publisher's website, though, and you can buy them from my publisher's website, which is Unbridled Books.
Okay. Getting back to the characters again, the reason it struck me a little bit was because I've known people who lived through the kinds of experiences that you record in your book. I remember my mother, conversation she had with her grandmother, my great-grandmother, who came from Norway in the late 1800s, and asked, why would you leave your home? Because she came by herself, as did Thea in the book. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, there was nothing for us to do there. Mm-hmm. There was no way to make a living. And so in order to have some hope for the future, they came to this country. And I certainly got that from your book, that while these people lived difficult lives in northern Minnesota, it was better than what they had left.
That's exactly why I think so many people left, not just Norway, but all of Europe. The promise of America, which was so alluring to so many people, was that you could come here and start over. And that's exactly what the character in my book is attempting to do, at the insistence of her own parents, who are the ones that recognize that there's no real future for her in her homeland. Being, you know, a proper middle-class kid from a proper middle-class American city like Minneapolis, it's always fascinated me, this notion that you would need to go start over somewhere. Not only what drove you to make that decision, but the implications and the way that things can either shine for you or sour for you, depending on your lot and your fate once you got here, has just been endlessly fascinating to me. And it's so much a part of our history, our American history. People coming here and starting over, yeah, it's always fascinated me, and I've always wanted to write about it, so I thought I'd tackle it in this book.
Well, we've been talking with Peter Guy, who is author of Safe from the Sea and The Lighthouse Road. He will be talking about his books and their setting along the north shore of Lake Superior at 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 17th at the Menominee Public Library. It's part of the 13th Annual Chippewa Valley Book Festival. And for more information on the festival and for a list of authors and events, you can go online to www.cvbookfest.org, all small letters, or call your local public library. Peter Guy, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your wonderful books with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org.
Spectrum West, 5:23 is our time. Here's a Spectrum memo. I Do is playing at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. You can make it a dinner show or a regular show. It's tonight and tomorrow night. Dinner is at 6, showtime 7:30. Tickets at cvca.net, by phone at 715-726-9000, and at the door, I'm sure. Also at the Heidi, the Conrad Johns Band will play Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. And remember the chili cook-off next Friday. I believe the deadline for entering your award-winning chili is today. Good luck. Well, Sunday, the Master Singers perform the first of their concerts in their 20th season. I knocked on the door recently of director Gary Schwartzoff's UW-Eau Claire office, and I asked if he was feeling it.
Yes, it's been, it's not my 20th season, but my 38th of doing what I'm doing, but 20 here with the Master Singers, and it's a milestone for sure for this ensemble of people who have dedicated themselves to the choral arts. Noted devotion on their part to present concerts both here in the Chippewa Valley and to travel about the Midwest.
This concert, America, My Home, The Road Home, it's about where we live and it's about how we live. It's very eclectic. How do you go about selecting those things? Because there's a combination of contemporary standards. Tell me about it.
Well, the music that has spoken to me that I've seen over the years, a few of these pieces I've done before, but most of them not. A lot of the music in this 20th season of the Master Singers are all new scores coming to us. It's always good to move on repertoire-wise. People are more interested in that in terms of the singers and the ensemble in particular. The piece which is the centerpiece of the concert is The Road Home by Stephen Paulus, and just speaks about where we live and we are enjoined by other people, whether it be family or friends. And so that's the central theme of this I tried to center around, and not just the physical home of where one lives, but also the home of our country.
Tell us a few other of the selections that are on the program, would you please?
Other works included The Waters Wide, a new arrangement by Craig Hella Johnson. He's a conductor of Conspirare, a professional choir in Houston, Texas. David Dickow, contemporary American composer from Mankato State University, is writing beautifully. This particular piece is a setting of an E.E. Cummings poem, Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair, by Stephen Paulus in Minneapolis. How Can I Keep from Singing by Gwyneth Walker. And the first set closes with So I'll Sing with My Voice by Dominic Argento. The second half has such pieces as Winter, which describes a relationship between a man and a woman through their lifetime of experiences. The commission work is Going Home by Andy Steffen. Be Music Night, set by Brad Ellingbow, frankly, I think one of our most complex pieces. And then we pay tribute to the United States and those who have served our country with two pieces at the end with a work entitled All That They Had, They Gave. And finally, the last work is going to be America the Beautiful by James Mulholland.
Gary Schwartzoff, musical director, Master Singers. The concert's at 2 p.m. Sunday. Don't worry, the Packer game's at night. First Lutheran Church on Oxford Avenue in Eau Claire, I have the distinct honor of acting as narrator for the event. If you've enjoyed their annual Christmas concerts, you might want to make the fall show a tradition as well. Master singers kind of like potato chips. You can't stop at just one.
Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony, presenting the Second Sight Concert, guest hosted by Lori Skelton, on Saturday, October 20th in Gantner Hall. Tickets are available at 832-6366 or at cvsymphony.org.
Thank you, sir. Well, next Wednesday, the 17th, it's the Terra Madre Quartet and Four Voices String Quartet in a show called Terra Madre at Gantner Concert Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center, UW-Eau Claire. It's at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at 800-949-UWEC. The Wide Spot PAC in Stockholm presents Performing Poetry by Terry Mesh, the Invading Interpreter. That is this evening, and that's at 7 o'clock, so don't miss it. Carl Wickland is a member of the Indian Head Barbershop Chorus, and it's good to know that he's an English teacher because it adds to the legend that the chorus is made up of people from all walks of life. They're about to make a tradition happen for the 54th time, their fall concert. But before we serve you the meat and potatoes about that, there's an important departure about this year's show, and we'll allow Mr. Wickland to lead with that bit of important news.
That's right. This year, the Indian Head Chorus is holding its Harvest of Harmony at the Amory High School Auditorium. For about the past, 30 years or more, it's been in Balsam Lake at the Unity Schools, but this year we've made the change and we're excited to have a new venue here.
Well, first, secondly, some impressive numbers. This is the 54th annual Harvest of Harmony concert. Congratulations on all that longevity. The toughest part of doing anything for a long time is making sure there are people waiting on the track to whom you can hand off the baton. Tell us, if you can, about the success that you have in keeping all of this stuff going for so long.
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into that. Some of it is just the dedication and the talent of our leadership. When Lauren Nelson founded the chorus back in the 50s, he stayed on at the helm as the director for a number of years, and they had quite some success. We've always had a number of people willing to step in as assistant directors. That's a role I fulfill myself, and all of our directors have come from within the membership of this chorus. We're also quite lucky in that up here in Polk and Burnett counties, though we're pretty rural, there is a very strong arts community and lots of music going on. So we've got not only an audience base to draw from, but a pretty big population of singers. We've managed to maintain a pretty solid and active membership base.
All different backgrounds, of course.
Yes. We've got guys who are truckers, men who are retired lawyers, doctors, students, teachers, all walks of life. The one thing that we've got in common is we love to sing.
You have the bigger group, you have smaller groups, you have some quartets, you have varied performances each year. So it appears as if membership can be at whatever level any individual desires it to be.
That's true. We love to have guys who are with us for everything we do. We've got a number of retired members who go south in the winter, so our membership shrinks a little bit at that point. And there are a handful of guys who are committed to be here for the October show every year, for the Harvest of Harmony every year. And we don't see them maybe too much at some of our other summer sing-outs at fairs, music in the park, things like that.
We're speaking with Carl Wickland. He is assistant director, one of them, of the Indian Head Barbershop Chorus. Coming up tomorrow, it's the 54th Harvest of Harmony. And important to note, this year it's at the Amory High School Auditorium, not in Balsam Lake as in the past. Two shows, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Carl, tell us about the special guest you have planned for the concert.
Well, aside from the usual excellent music from the chorus and our local quartets, we have two special guests coming in. Our headlining quartet is Metropolis. They're coming to us from Southern California. They have been performing together for quite some time, and they have competed in the Barbershop Harmony Society international competition and were the bronze medalists for 5 years running. These are top-notch singers, and they also put on a pretty funny show as well. Our other guest quartet is Grand Design. This is a more local quartet from Wisconsin and southern Minnesota, who are also excellent, excellent musicians and have been competing internationally and locally as well.
I also understand that the show itself kind of comes in two halves. First half is kind of the lighter fare.
That's right. The first half of the show features the chorus and our local quartets in about a dozen songs. And these songs are tied together with sketch comedy, some pretty wonderful cornball humor that our crack staff of writers has put together. And of course, we have some wonderful actors every year who will put that on. So it's a fun, fun first half. The second half is more of a concert format with our special guest quartets and also some guest singers from Somerset High School. Every year, our chorus offers a grant to local music departments. The winner of the grant each year is invited to come take part in our show. And at the end of the second half, the chorus returns in full concert format.
So that is one of the important things that Indian Head Barbershop Chorus does on an annual basis, is you support music education.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a fundamental part of our mission, is to keep youth singing, not just through our grant program, but we also travel to schools and are able to assist with youth quartets there and other musical education events. We also are one of the sponsors of a local Youth and Harmony Festival every year.
From which, I will bet, you have garnered some members.
We have, and some of those members have actually gone to other choruses as well. There are several barbershop choruses in this area of Wisconsin and just over the river in Minnesota.
Is there an electronic way to find out more about your group and Saturday's show?
There certainly is. We're on Facebook. You can search for Indian Head Chorus there, or you can go to IndianHeadChorus.org, and there's plenty of information there and contacts as well.
The Indian Head Barbershop Chorus. Mm-hmm. The Indian Head, yeah. Now, you know, it makes sense if every member is like Carl, because he's a wonderful guy. The Indian Head Barbershop Chorus at the high school auditorium, though, keep this in mind, in Amory tomorrow at 2 p.m. and in the evening at 7:30. Thanks and all the best to a remarkable track record for longevity. The time is 5:33. This is Spectrum West.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Ken Vance Volkswagen, featuring the new 2013 Volkswagen Jetta with the keyless push-button system, allowing drivers to start and unlock the Jetta without using keys. More at kenvance.com.
Spectrum West, here's a Spectrum memo. It's the weekend of the 2012 Wisconsin, West Wisconsin Pottery Tour until 7 tonight, then again tomorrow and Sunday. Three pottery studios in the River Falls area are part of the tour. Info is at West Wisconsin Pottery, not West, Western Wisconsin Pottery Tour.com. Got it? Okay. Well, Catherine Schneider is a person who I think had a conversation with her disability way back as a child. She's been blind since birth, and I imagine it went something like this. Sit down and listen. I don't want you to ever think you have the upper hand in this relationship. I'm going to consider you a speed bump, nothing more. I will not let you limit me in any real way. Yes, I'll have to do some things differently than other people do, but most of what I do and how I do it will be as strong and as positive as others, if not stronger and more affirming. I'm not going to recognize the challenges you present as shortcomings, but rather as inspirations. Are we clear? Okay. Thus, the determined and inspired Catherine Schneider went on to a distinguished career as a senior psychologist in counseling services at UW Eau Claire, author and driving force behind the Schneider Disability Issues Forum. I discovered that synonyms of the word forum are both meeting and opportunity, and I'll bet that's exactly what you hoped it would be.
It is. I worked for UW Eau Claire for 14 years, mm-hmm. and I had the opportunity both on and off campus to talk on disability issues a lot while I was working there and since I've retired, but I'm just one voice. I sponsor the Disability Issues Forum to bring other credible disability voices to the Chippewa Valley.
Interestingly enough, even though some people share a kind of disability, no disability really is the same, is it?
No. Something like 1 out of 7 of us have disabilities, so everybody gets to do it their own way.
Some visible, some invisible, some from birth, some acquired. You know, everybody does it different. I think there are different parts of a disability, too. Okay, I'm blind. Mm-hmm. I cannot see. But in certain environments, that creates many problems. And in other environments, like familiar environments to me, that does not. So it depends on the environment. It depends on the accommodations. For example, I just got back from a Wisconsin Public Radio Association meeting, and a lot of the handouts were provided to me electronically ahead of time, so I read them with my talking computer. So no disability there. If they just plop something in front of me in regular print, that would be a disability.
I presume that it's equally vital for society in general to understand the challenges of disabilities, as well as for those with disabilities to talk about, compare, and understand for the purpose of kind of collaboratively finding ways to overcome your limitations.
Well, and I think there's a third part of it, not just for those of us with disabilities to figure out ways to overcome, but for those of us with disabilities to, like you said, compare, share, and figure out ways to work with society to make things better.
Ah.
Because, yeah, mostly I've got to adjust because there are more of you than there are of me, but at the same time, there are things that society can do so that people with disabilities can function as well as possible. One reason that I'm glad that the Chippewa Valley Book Festival is co-sponsoring this, they're recognizing that disability voices need to be represented in the book festival and in their Authors in Public Schools program. They're recognizing that we ought to be at the table, too, and that we have stories to tell and things to say.
How, in your estimation, is society doing in accommodating those with disabilities? Over the years, obviously, we've seen a lot of accommodations. We've seen the handicapped parking areas. We see Braille on elevator buttons and things. How are we doing?
I think we're doing great, and there's room for improvement. It has been improved in many ways, and then sometimes with every improvement, then you got to work on it all over again. For example, all the new technologies. Some of them are accessible right out of the box, and some of them are not. And even though they're the newest and latest, all of a sudden we have to fight the accessibility battle again. Accessibility to me, though, in addition to the curb cuts and the Braille and that sort of good stuff, is also people. People saying, what do you need? How can I help? That is the true accessibility.
Well, how are we doing in that department?
Well, for example, when you asked me to come on the radio and said, why don't you just drop by the studio? I said, transportation's an issue, so let's brainstorm how we can do it.
Okay.
And we did. It wasn't rocket science, but we figured it out together.
Yeah. Well, you know, you brought up technology, and I have a question down that alley for you. But let's talk about the low-tech assistance that you receive, and that is, of course, your assistance dog. You have a dog named Luna now, yes?
Yes, I do. It's my ninth seeing eye dog.
Oh, my.
I've had dogs for 39 years, and there's a club you can join at Seeing Eye when you've had dogs for 50 years, and that's one of my goals in life is to make it into the 50-year club.
You know, and I'm a dog owner, and I'm a dog lover. You know, your perspective on losing a dog is quite different than mine.
She's my eye, she's my transportation, she's my best friend, and every time one retires, it's hard. It doesn't get any easier. You hope they work till they're, 10 years old or so. My last one retired just at age 6 because she developed an eye problem that wasn't fixable, and a seeing eye dog with an eye problem is not a good thing.
No.
And she's living up on the north side of Eau Claire and enjoying retirement life, so that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
And Luna and I are learning to dance together.
And Luna is how old?
She's 2.5, and I've had her 2 months.
Mm-hmm. How much of seeing eye dog training is done for you when they get there, and how much do you have to participate in?
Well, there's kind of a 3-stage process. The first year, they're raised by a family, and they take them everywhere and teach them where you go to the bathroom, and they teach them to be quiet and meetings and all those good kind of things. Then when they're a little bit over a year, they go to the Seeing Eye School. In my case, that's where I get my dogs, is Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey, and other people get them from other places. Mm-hmm. And then they have 3-4 months of training there. Then you go out to the school and have 3 or 4 weeks of training with your dog, and then you bring them back and you work with them in your home community. It's a long process. Wow. And when you bring them home, it's about 6 months until you know what they're thinking and they know what you're thinking, and each of you knows how far you can push it.
Will dogs ever be replaced by a robot?
Well, they have designed some. At the moment, I think they're about as big as a filing cabinet, and you could push those down the street ahead of you, I guess. Some people have guide horses because they live longer. That wouldn't be a personal choice of mine. I think in my lifetime, the dog guide's futures are safe. I'd really rather not have a robot, even if it was equally capable.
No, me neither. But you brought up an interesting point. I was going to ask about technology. I mean, it sounds as if technology is kind of a two-edged thing for you, because it's, I'm sure on one hand, it's wonderful. There are things that have been opened up to you that weren't before. But on the other hand, it keeps changing, and it's, with each change, it's a challenge.
Yeah, you got to fight the battle over again. Like the latest version of the Kindle is not accessible to blind people. The one before it was. Now, why they went backwards, I do not know.
Well, do me a favor. I'd like it to come from the person after whom this is named. Invite people to the 4th Annual Schneider Disability Issues Forum. Tell them why they should attend.
I would love for people to come to the 4th Annual Schneider Disability Issues Forum, whether you're a dog person, whether you like to hear somebody tell interesting stories about their life that might be different from your life in some ways, might be similar to your life in some ways, whether you are just interested in a good read. 2 + 4 = 1 is definitely a good read. Whether you have a friend who needs for the lecture to be signed or captioned, it will be both. So it really is open to all. Whoever you are, come on down. Oh, and also I think there will be some pups that are being trained to be leader dog pups. So there will be some very young and very cute dogs in the audience, as well as over 100 university students and other adult humans. So it's going to be a fine time.
And I believe that. Catherine Schneider, the Schneider in the name Schneider Disability Issues Forum, next Thursday. It just so happens to feature another Kathy. And we'll introduce you to Kathy Nimmer in a moment.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Visit Winona. Winona, the historic island city along Minnesota's Great River Road, Highway 61. Online at visitwinona.com, where arts, culture, and river beauty converge.
Thanks for being with us on Spectrum West. Now let's meet Kathy Nimmer, coming from Indiana as the keynote speaker at this year's Disability Issues Forum. And as Kathy Schneider noted, this year the Chippewa Valley Book Festival is a co-sponsor. In addition to being a teacher, the author Kathy Nimmer has given us 2 + 4 = 1, celebrating the partnership of people with disabilities and their assistance dogs. Her presentation Thursday afternoon is titled Paws and Paperclips, Musings from a Blind Teacher, Author, and Guide Dog Handler. She joined me on the phone from the Hoosier State. Tell us about your career, first of all, as a teacher, and then we'll kind of segue into the rest of it.
Well, like a lot of people, I was inspired when I was young by some really great teachers, and I like to think of myself as taking a piece of, 5 or 6 of them and making the ideal role that I try to fulfill every day, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But I've been teaching now since 1992, in the same high school in West Lafayette, Indiana, Harrison High School. Taught different things along the way, but it's always English. 10th grade English and creative writing are my two fortes in recent years, and particularly creative writing, which is an elective.
And, of course, occasionally your classroom gets much larger, as it will be when you come to Eau Claire for the Disability Forum. Tell us about that other career as a public speaker.
I've always enjoyed sharing in various venues. Back in high school, I was on the speech team, and then in college, I started doing some speeches to organizations and clubs and all, and since then, it has just blossomed into a side career that I love. I have various focuses that I take, including some guide dog talks to younger children. I've done some Braille and blindness workshops for people who are interested in learning how to read and write, the basics of Braille, and just how blind people do this and that. And then my life story, my journey from being a sighted child and then losing my vision over the years, that is another story that I make into an inspirational and motivational one, and just all different kinds of opportunities. I speak twice a year at Purdue, near my home here, speak to the university education classes, focus there on how to adapt classrooms for children with visual impairments, and then also just how to be an excellent teacher. Just lots of different things. So I'm always eager to seek out a new audience and see what I can share and what they can give back to me.
Interesting that within that answer, you at least a couple times use the word focus. And, of course, focus from a physical standpoint kind of goes to optics and sight. But you don't need that, I guess, to have a very sharp focus.
In a way, I feel that as a blind person, I've had the ability to focus more easily than sighted people because sight is so much a part of everyone's world as their number one sense that when that is gone, those secondary senses, such as sound and smell and all, they have to rise up. And I can pay attention to so many other things that that sighted people have the capability to access, but often just don't even notice because the sight is predominant. So just today in class, I knew that some kids were eating some chocolate and peanut butter because of the very faint smell. And there were no rattling papers or anything, but I just said, whoever has the chocolate and peanut butter, you know you can't be eating in class, and I need you to put that away. And there was this pause, and then this girl about probably 10 feet away said, "Miss Nimmer, how did you know that?" And I just laughed because I could focus on that smell and pick up, you know, discern. That's just a small moment, but life is full of things to notice and to focus on that are not visual, and I feel almost privileged sometimes to let my other senses and my imagination take over where sight doesn't exist for me anymore.
I'm not going to presume that you have thought about this, but Catherine Schneider, our other guest, was blind from birth. You, as you said, realized your disability over time. Have you thought about or determined whether or not your disability, well, the intensity of it, has it been made to be more intense because at one time you could see and you very frustratingly lost sight?
I had 100% vision till I was 7 or 8, but then partial vision and quite strong vision that was just gradually declining from about age 7 on down to 23. So I've had at least partial vision for more of my life than I haven't had. We actually talked about that a lot when I went to the Indiana School for the Blind for middle school and high school. And we often would have conversations because there were students there like me who had lost vision gradually, and then there were others like Catherine who had been born with no vision at all.
Uh-huh.
And it's a mixed bag, and it's all about how you choose to see it. I think that the people who had no vision from the beginning were largely more adjusted to the disability, didn't feel as much, perhaps, of the loss or what they were missing because their entire lives had been without vision. They even dreamed in motion and sound and had no concept of a loss there. On the flip side, those of us who had vision before were able to picture colors and spatial concepts that can never really be communicated well by just words. For instance, I right now can picture a sunset in my mind. I see all of the colors. I see how the colors bleed into each other, and I see that on my mind's eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we always felt fortunate, those of us who had vision before, to retain those memories that so filtered into the imagination and helped make pictures clearer. And yet the grieving process for the loss was much heavier
sure.
Than a lot of the people who were born blind. And so which angle you choose to focus on.
Wow, interesting. That's the voice of Kathy Nimmer, author of 2 plus 4 equals 1, Celebrating the Partnership of People with Disabilities and Their Assistance Dogs. She'll be presenting Paws and Paper Clips, Musings from a Blind Teacher, Author, and Guide Dog Handler as part of the Schneider Disability Issues Forum, the fourth annual, at 4 p.m. on Thursday, the 18th, Hibbard Humanities Hall at UW-Eau Claire. Kathy, I too have treasured canine companions, and I'm fortunate to be able to see the joy in the motion of their tails and their chase of the always elusive squirrel, but I'll bet you too can feel maybe even more than I can within the trusted relationship you have with your dog.
Yes, I've had 3 guide dogs now. I'm on my third, and it's the little things, the sweet moments of connection when we are working as one. That's where my title of the book came from, with 2 eyes, ears, hands, or feet, plus 4 paws equals 1 magical union. When these assistance dogs, guide dogs, and others can team together and form that bond, I think even the regret that I feel for not being able to see the face of my guide dog, all of that just evaporates when that partnership is so magnified. And he communicates with me in so many ways. As we're walking down the street, sometimes his tail wags and hits the back of my leg, or when we stop at a curb, which he's supposed to do, he'll often turn his head and nudge my leg. And if I have shorts on or something, I feel this little wet nose going up against my leg. And it's either, see, Mom, I'm taking care of you and doing what I was trained, or it's, I've done something good, so please give me a cookie for that. I'm not really sure which, but we'll go with the former. And that partnership is a joy for me and for many, many people who experience the gift of an assistance dog.
You mentioned you are a motivational speaker. I'm curious as to where your motivation comes from. Who has motivated you in your life?
So many people. It's parts of a big puzzle. I pull together the strength and kind of core courage of my parents, who have always just been a vital force of belief behind me, nervous sometimes for things that I choose to take on, but always supportive in the long run. And then, of course, the teachers who inspired me to reach out and try to touch a generation and guide them toward greater learning and greater appreciation for creativity and literature. I have a strong faith that propels me toward confidence that there are forces in play that I cannot see or know or understand, and just believe that there is a purpose and a reason for everything that happens, and that that it will all come together. And I also have friends who have accepted me for who I am and not let a disability change that relationship. I don't want to be thought of as the blind daughter, the blind colleague, the blind teacher, the blind friend. We, I think, are all given, you know, a certain set of circumstances to deal with, and we have a choice. Catherine and I are not perfect human beings who always make the right choice to focus on the positive. We have ups and downs as well, but I don't think that anybody who has a disability considers that disability as the defining characteristic. It's just one part of it. When I wake up in the morning at 4:52 a.m., I am not thinking, darn it, I'm still blind. I'm thinking, shoot, that came really early. And I'm teaching in front of a class. Sometimes I wish I could see my kids, but I'm focused on what I can bring to the table. And, you know, we all make those choices. I think that's just part of making the best out of our life and looking at the big picture, and all the people who have been part of that have given me that motivation.
Well said. The book is a compilation. Tell me quickly about the process of putting that together, because there's a lot of stuff in there.
There's a lot of stuff, and it took about a year and a half of very, very hard work. I received a grant from the Lilly Community Foundation to start this project. I created a website and solicited over 300 submissions from around the world, from people who either wrote about their experience raising puppies for assistance programs, working with dogs, or who signed up for the interview option where they themselves were not writers, but they knew they had a story to tell, and so I called them or emailed them and interviewed and wrote for them. And then I assembled a panel of judges to help me narrow down to right around 100 of the best stories and poems and put them together into eight chapters that trace the existence of assistance dogs from puppyhood on up through that first pairing with a blind person or a deaf person or someone in a wheelchair, on up through daily life, funny things that happen because, oh, there are funny things, trials that they have to overcome, on through the very sad seventh chapter where the retirements and the death of the dog shakes our world pretty profoundly. And then the eighth chapter of hope and renewal because, you know, the sun always does still rise the next day. And even after a loss, there is hope. So it's a journey, a book, and it's not one necessarily meant to be read in one sitting from front cover to back cover. But it has a piece of something for everybody in there. I hope that my readers learn. I hope they laugh. I know they'll cry. And I know that they will come away having a greater concept of what this partnership is all about.
The sun does rise every day. We have the luxury of being able to see it daily. You have to feel it. And I have to tell you that I think you feel a lot.
Certainly do.
Congratulations. And mostly thanks for everything you do. And we look forward to seeing you in Eau Claire.
I'll be very, very happy to be there, and I hope that a lot of people are able to be as lifted up as I can make them through my visit there, and I know I'll be growing a lot myself by being part of it all. I'm very excited.
Gotta tell you, I am honored to have both Kathys on today's program, Schneider and Nimmer, not because they consistently challenge and overcome their particular disability. They don't want much credit for that because there's no other way to live, but out of respect for their willingness to help their fellow man, and that, you guys, is you and I. The Schneider Disability Issues Forum Thursday, beginning 4 p.m., room 100 of the Hibbard Humanities Hall, UW Eau Claire, a doggone good idea. Spectrum Memo, the Shell Lake Art Center and Shell Lake Chamber present Oktoberfest tomorrow evening, beginning at 6. The Wonder Bar Polka Band will play, dancing, and a whole lot more at the Daryl Aderman Auditorium. There's a concert by the Wind Symphony and Symphony Band at UW Eau Claire Sunday afternoon at 2 in Gantner Concert Hall. Also the weekend, as I said earlier, the 21st Annual Clearwater Choral Festival. Performances are tonight, tomorrow afternoon, and tomorrow evening. There's a small $5 charge for this evening's a cappella extravaganza. Tomorrow's event's no charge. What else can I tell you? Tomorrow, the Dunn County Historical Society concludes their African-American Baseball in Dunn County series with a presentation by Matt Carter called Baseball in the Upper Midwest. Begins at 1:30, Rasbach Heritage Museum in Menominee. Visit DunnCounty.org for more. Hey, thanks for being here, guys. It's been a lot of fun. I'm Al Ross. Next week, comedian Louie Anderson will be with us. The Chippewa Valley Symphony initiates a new season, a trip to Shell Lake. And I'll bet you even more. Happy you could join us. Have a great weekend. See you next Friday.
Wisconsin is home to some wonderful folk musicians, and we'll hear several of them this Sunday on Simply Folk. I'm Stephanie Elkins, and you have chosen the playlist this week. We'll hear Judy Collins, Steve Goodman, and some bluegrass. Join me for listener requests this Sunday from 5 until 8, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.